In this world, you will have trouble. John 16:33. I have come that you might have life and life to the full. John 10:10. I'd been home less than 24 hours when I got the call from my sister, Claire. It was time. I'd hardly been back home in Oxford, England, long enough to throw anything in the wash or put my suitcase back in the attic, but it was time. Time to head back to Vancouver, Canada, to my mum's house where she'd lived since marrying my stepfather nearly 20 years earlier. She'd been battling aggressive small cell lung cancer for the last year, and I'd just spent 2 precious weeks visiting her. How could it be time? Had things deteriorated that fast? I chucked some mismatched clothes and my wash bag back into my suitcase, landed a firm but quick, "Oh my goodness, I've got to go," peck on Al's cheek, followed by one for each of the kids, and then dashed back to the majestic coast of the Pacific Northwest. Mum was barely conscious by the time I arrived at the hospital, yet she appeared to have been waiting for me, the last of her kids, to arrive. Turning her head as I perched on the edge of the bed, she smiled weakly, the corners of her mouth curling slightly upward, relief filling her eyes. "You made it," she mumbled. As her breathing became laboured and she slipped unconscious, we held her hands and prayed. She passed away as we, my sisters, Claire and Joe, and our stepfather with his grown children, looked on helplessly. In this world, you will have trouble. 6 short years later, Claire had to make another call. It was time. Again. With an ominous sense of déjà vu, I went through the motions as if acting in a play I'd rehearsed only once before. Once again, it seemed like just a few hours that I'd been home. By then, Al and I had moved with our 3 small kids to Charlotte, North Carolina, to plant City Church, and I'd been back in England for a week visiting my sister Jo in Torquay. It was now Jo's turn to be fighting that same terrifying disease, aggressive small cell lung cancer. When I'd hugged her goodbye, stroking her soft, fuzzy, chemo-bald head, my bubbly, vivacious chef of a sister may have been a shadow of herself physically, but she'd still been the same old feisty, belligerent girl I knew and loved who could crack a joke like a stand-up comic. How could it be time? Had things deteriorated that quickly? It was just after Christmas, and we were having a brilliant time sightseeing and freezing our butts off in DC, when the international number flashed up on my phone. My stomach lurched. I just knew. I'd thrown my passport into my bag just in case this happened, but it had felt like a betrayal to Joe's strength to fight on, so I'd studiously ignored the fear warning me to pack my little black dress and pumps. All I had with me were jeans, fleece socks, my winter boots, and the rather gaudy fake fur earmuffs I'd had to buy to save my ears from the biting DC wind. It would have to do. Once again, I kissed Al and the kids goodbye, found a seat on the first flight from DC to London, and crossed the Atlantic deep in fear-motivated prayer. As the train from London came to a stop, I stepped down into my father's waiting arms. We stood, clinging to one another, our hug tight and lingering, oblivious to the other passengers navigating awkwardly around us. His unuttered fear and grief were deafening. When I told her you were on your way, she smiled and said, "Oh, it's that close, is it?" Holding me at arm's length, he looked me in the eyes. "She knows it's nearly time, and she doesn't seem frightened. That's good. That's a good thing," he reassured us both. The pain of seeing my father ache for his dying daughter tore me apart. It's just wrong.